oftentimes it's better to start with creativity to help you learn the facts.
Life is too short to learn a list of 1,000 rando words.
From the campus of Stanford University,
this is Schools In
with your hosts, Dan Schwartz and Denise Pope.
Welcome to Schools In. I'm Denise Pope, senior lecturer with the Graduate School of Education here at Stanford, and I am with my co-host, Dan Schwartz, Dean of the Graduate School of Education.
Hello, Dr. Pope Du Partnership.
Pope Du Partnership.
Du, as in D-U.
Oh, it's French.
I think so. May we.
Hey, Dan, this could be slightly embarrassing. Yeah. Are you prepared for this?
Always.
Okay. When you were a teacher, and you taught in a couple of different places, did you keep up with the latest educational research to hone your craft?
It would be embarrassing if I weren't like everybody else. But so in Africa, probably not.
Okay. Well, probably all right. Not. I'll give you a buy there.
So when I was teaching in Los Angeles, I would just come home and do my lesson plan and sleep because it was so hard. When I taught in Alaska, there's no phones, there's no internet. It was very remote. That's not to say I would have kept up on the research literature had it been possible, but they did fly us to professional development.
So this what do you mean?
So I'm in a village on the Arctic Circle, and it's the middle of winter, so it's like 40 below. And you get on a plane, and then you get on another plane, and then you get another plane, and we go to San Francisco for professional development.
Wow.
Yeah, so it was kind of a miss because I've been living in a dark, frozen, wonderful place, but dark, frozen, eating fish and moose meat, and suddenly I'm in San Francisco.
Oh, yeah. So you didn't go to that PD?
No, I didn't make a minute of the professional development. So the answer is no.
No. You did not keep up. I will tell you something that's funny about my first experience, which is we were given at my school where I was a high school English teacher, one what I thought was sort of the only education journal that had all the answers in it, all the research. It was just a short little journal that came out each month called Kappen. It still exists.
Yeah.
Phi Delta Kappen. But I had no idea that there were these other journals out there that looked at education. I thought there was only one because that's all I got delivered to me.
Yeah. Well, and you didn't read it.
You don't know that. No, wait a minute. Every once in a while I would read it, but I too was very, very tired. New teachers are tired, you know.
I'm not going to fall. I'm going to let that go because the next question is old teachers.
Old teachers are tired too. So, okay, so who reads the journal? Do people read the journals?
Well, this is the major way that academics get research out there. And the hope is that somehow it's going to get into the hands of the practitioners.
And we're an N of two, and that has not happened.
No. And I think we're an N of an infinity.
Yeah.
I think the articles aren't really written for practitioners.
Yeah.
They tend not to give you direct tips, things like that, that are actionable. So the question is, can we do better? Can we get very good, important research from the academy into teachers' hands, classrooms' hands, school districts' hands? And so how can we do that? And so, you know, design a good curriculum and then sell it to a company, and maybe the company gets it into the schools. That would be one way to do it.
I have another way.
Does it involve something called challenge success?
How did you know? We do this in challenge success, right? Where our big thing is getting the research into the hands of the teachers and the schools and the administration. And we will write very simple sort of 5-page summaries of complicated research and get that in the hands of parents and teachers. We'll put on professional development to kind of translate the research. And hopefully it's not deathly boring professional development, although we too have had every once in a while, someone ditches our professional development because they're, you know, it's close to San Francisco. It's the same. It's you 20 years earlier.
So today, we're going to talk to someone who has a different approach. Instead of bringing the research to the district, Laura Wentworth brings the researchers to the district to do research within the district. So this is innovative. This is different. My pleasure to introduce Dr. Laura Wentworth. She is a proud alumna of Stanford Graduate School of Education, and we are proud of her. She received a teaching master's degree and a doctorate in education in administration and policy analysis. She currently works for California Education Partners And she helps us have a partnership with school districts so that she helps the School of Education partner with school districts in a very unique way. And so we're going to ask you about that, Laura, and welcome. Thank you for coming.
Thank you for
so
having me.
So excited to have you.
So this is not just a partnership. So lots of people say they're doing partnerships where they go in, they measure the kids, and they leave, right? They say, oh, look, we took all their temperatures and we're gone. This is different. So tell us how this is different.
So how this is different is the researchers and practitioners are actually working together on research from the very beginning. So it's not just researchers reading their journal articles, sitting in their office thinking about great questions to ask. They're actually in conversation with their practice partners, engaging with them, trying to shape the research questions from the very beginning together with the practice partner. So that's one big difference.
So does this have a name? Is it as opposed to generic partnership?
So I think in the field, people know this as a research practice partnership. And so what does that mean? A research practice partnership, different than your average interaction between a researcher and practitioner. Generally, the field thinks of it as having five characteristics. So it's long-term. It's not going to be one study and you're done. It's going to be mutually beneficial. So the researcher is going to get something out of it and the practice partner is going to get something out of it. So if I'm a teacher working on a project, I'm going to be learning. I'm going to be honing my craft. It also has specific structures and strategies for actually working together. So you have to have a routine. You know, all the schools aren't on Stanford campus. The researchers have to go to the practitioners. The practitioners come to campus and work with the researchers. Also, it produces research. They're working on research together.
Shocking!
Shocking! I know. And then again, it's focused on, back to my original point, it's focused on problems of practice. So it's focused on real issues in education that a teacher in a classroom might be experiencing, even a parent or someone in the community might be experiencing.
So hang on. If you say that as though researchers aren't all working on problems of practice. What are researchers who are not working on problems of practice doing?
Well, they're reading the literature. They're reading mm-hmm. about each other's research. They're looking mm-hmm. across the field. And they're thinking about questions from the literature, from the theory. So we're just adding, in these research practice partnerships, we're adding another element to that. And in some ways, the way we've been training teachers and the way, like, Challenge Success works, this happens automatically. I mean, the researchers are there training the teachers in pre-service programs, but that's not really true in service, right? You often get to your classroom when you start teaching and you're like, oh, wait a minute, everything I learned in my pre-service went out the window. Here, it's the leaders, it's the principals, it's the teachers, it could be the parents, coming and working with these researchers on the problems in real time.
So one thing I know, because we actually, Challenge Success, are a part of this RPP, Research Practice Partnership for short, is that even if we have really what we think are compelling questions, the way it's set up, at least with San Francisco Unified, is that's not enough. Right? They have to think it's compelling questions, and they have to sort of agree or vote. How does it work, Laura? I don't know. But
it really comes down to the relationship and the engagement, right? So it is a negotiation between the researcher and the practitioner coming up with questions that are mutually beneficial to both, that are going to produce research that's useful for the field beyond just one school district or one classroom, but that's also useful for the practice partner who's engaging.
This is Schools In with Denise Pope and Dan Schwartz, and we're talking today with Laura Wentworth, who is in charge of a research practice partnership between Stanford and San Francisco Unified. You don't usually hear that. That's a weird term. I don't think our listeners know, or even knew such a thing existed. Yeah.
Yeah. So I'm a faculty member, and I've decided I have a new way to teach math. And I go and I knock on every teacher's door asking them, would they let me in? That's sort of been my experience without a partnership.
Right.
So what happens in a partnership that's different than that?
Well, even if you're a researcher and you have a great way to teach math, you might start a conversation with a group of practitioners rather than saying, hey, can I test this in your classroom? You could say,
that explains why all the doors got shut on me. Here we go.
Dan, you said you know best and I can do it better and you're not doing it right and let me in.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly.
That,
it was
that's a
3x5 index card. I read that script to them.
That's a problem.
Yeah. So different. You might come and say, hey, what is working and what's not working in math for you? And start by drawing out what are their key issues or questions, what type of information or things do they want to know that would help them improve their mathematics.
Interesting.
Yeah, no, that's good.
Yeah, that's not how I do it. It's not. I go in. So I taught a long time, so I kind of know what the problems of practice are. And I come in and I pitch the teacher. And I say, let me show you what I have in mind. I think this is really going to be fun. I think the students will love it. And we sort of negotiate from there, as opposed to me observing their classroom for a while and saying, boy, wouldn't you like all the kids to be talking?
Mm-hmm.
Right, so, but what happens is that I go to the teacher, and then the principal gets upset that I didn't come through the principal.
Yes, the gatekeeper. That in my qualitative research class, the principal's called the gatekeeper. And you sideswiped the gatekeeper.
And so we did this one study where the results were amazing. I mean, we really improved the kids' outcomes. The kids loved it. The teachers loved it. Principal said, you can't come back. You didn't ask me the first time.
Oh.
So this was definitely not a partnership model.
No.
Yeah.
One of the rules of research is leave the field clean. You know, like when you go hiking and you bring in...
does this destroy the evidence?
What is
this?
No, this is...
Bury the body?
No, like this. So you know when you go hiking all the time, so you will appreciate this. And you have your granola bar or your moose meat, as you said, and it has a wrapper. You do not leave that wrapper in nature. You leave the field clean. You pack it in, pack it out, right? So one of the rules in research is the same thing. If you are going and you are not doing what you're supposed to do as a researcher, if you're not setting a good example or being a nice partner, you will ruin it at that school for other people who want to come in and do research. So this is another reason for the research practice partnership.
I didn't just ruin it for me. I ruined it for everybody else.
Yeah, because that principal is going to be wary now of other Dan Schwartzes out there. Laura, am I right?
Well, and I also think the principal or even the principal's boss, the central
superintendent.
Yeah. Might be thinking, oh, great, I get that working in a couple classrooms, but how do I get this working across all classrooms? So one thing we do in partnerships is think about the system in the schools and the classrooms as a system. And so we're designing not just for one classroom, but for that system, so that if we find something that works, we can say, hey, this can then work in these other classrooms as well.
That's interesting.
This is Schools In with Denise Pope and Dan Schwartz. We're talking with Laura Wentworth about research practice partnerships, and particularly her role as someone who brings researchers together with practitioners in San Francisco.
It's interesting. We've been considering collaborating with community colleges, and what's come back is you can't do it with one community college. You need to do it with a consortium of community colleges if there's any hope for it to scale.
Yeah, I mean, it's a similar concept, too, right? Oftentimes, too, there is this idea that if you're doing research in one context and you do a randomized control trial and you get these incredible results, you have this issue where you can't reproduce the results anywhere else except for within those conditions. So this is why partnerships are mutually beneficial and that the researchers need sites to do their research at. They need sites to replicate their studies. And oftentimes, similar to what you were talking about, there's this idea of the reciprocal nature. So the practitioners also need to be getting something out of this. And that's what for many years has not been happening. So this idea of thinking about, you know, what's in it for them.
So it seems like two principles here so far. One is reciprocal benefit. The other is reciprocal translation, so that the district is translating their wisdom to the researchers and vice versa, something like that. So if I have a little bit of insight, so I'm going to characterize how this works and then correct me.
Okay.
Or say, Dan, you are amazing.
Got it all wrong.
No, don't say that. Please don't. His head is already way big.
No, this is one of those days where I'm fishing for compliments. All right. A few compliments would be fine,
okay,
people.
Fine.
So I think it to my perspective, the partnerships are pretty unique because the highest level of the administration kind of sets the agenda. They say, we're interested in English language learners, right? Or we're interested in bringing up math. And this is done through a lot of deft work on your part, helping them understand what would be a tractable kind of question and issue that they would have. Once that's done, on our side, at the school side, we create a request for proposals, and we give faculty an opportunity to compete, to actually be able to go in and do work on this broad umbrella topic. And then that's when the matchmaking starts. And that's where you have like this special mojo where you know this faculty person is going to get along with this teacher leader and they're going to make magic.
Yeah, it's, you know, you think about it in medicine, how it happens. You know, patients walk through the, you know, doctor's office, and there's research hospitals that people come to. How does that happen between schools of education and school districts? And so, yes, in my role, I'm this broker. I'm matchmaking. I'm consensus making. I'm trying to find that middle ground. But ultimately, I'm really a coach. I'm trying to help the researcher and practitioner work together, even when I'm not there. So no, it's a lot of upfront work, but really they wind up working on research on their own.
So there was a faculty member who complained to me about the partnership. And they complained because they wanted to give the test during their outcome test. They wanted to do it during lunch. And the school district was sort of like, you can't do that.
Children need to eat.
And the researcher was really frustrated. This is where your coaching would come in.
Yeah. So in that instance, you know, I would really get that faculty member to listen. And really listen to what are the realities in school to find a better opportunity for that. But ultimately, in that situation, the practitioner hopefully would have come to the table originally to the project because it's a compelling topic for them. They want research on this topic, and they want to know, hey, is this working, what we're doing? Are we implementing this in the right way? Can you help us design things that actually could work better in our schools and classrooms?
Well, when we come back from break, I want to hear about a win-win. I want to hear about some study that was done that you just thought that was a win for the school and that was a win for the university. Okay, cool. So this is Schools In with Denise Pope and Dan Schwartz, and we will have more exciting information with Laura Wentworth about research practice partnerships next on Sirius XM.
This is Schools In.
I'm not an expert at this. Okay. I'm more expert than you.
When you can't read in American society, you are really left out.
With Dan Schwartz and Denise Pope
from the campus of Stanford University.
Welcome back to Schools In with Dan Schwartz and Denise Pope. We are talking with Laura Wentworth today, who is a bit of a matchmaker between San Francisco Unified and Stanford researchers in something called a research practice partnership.
Win-win, baby. Let's hear it.
Let me translate. Dan would like you to give an example of one research practice partnership study project that was good for the researchers, but as good
just one?
For the practitioners. Oh, you can give a couple.
All right.
Go for it.
Well, I'd say one, again, I work in a partnership with San Francisco and Stanford, and this is California, and there's a big proportion of English learner students in California. And one of the things San Francisco had done is made a huge investment in bilingual education. And they'd always relied on some research done someplace else saying bilingual education was a good thing. But they wanted research in their own backyard, and really the field needed some more research in this topic. So they came to Stanford professor, Sean Reardon, who was a doctoral student, now is a faculty at the University of Oregon, Alana Umansky and others, to try to address this problem. And so they did the research looking at the different pathways and different programs English learners could take, and they found that the bilingual programs over time really did have a big impact and achievement in the students' achievement. So this gave the district confidence that this was a good program, they should stick with it, they might even spread this program. It also then influenced the state and some of the policies at the state level that, hey, wait a minute, bilingual education, for a long time in California, it was not thought of as such a good thing, but has really influenced the state-level policy discussion as well.
Very cool.
Kind of a win-win-win.
Yeah, I was going to say that's a triple win.
Yeah, and it really, it produced, I mean, I asked, it's produced so many journal articles for Professor Amansky and Reardon, and so it's really influencing the field as well as giving back to the district and the state. So,
and then ultimately, the children.
Yeah, the children. And the teachers, I think, too. You know, there's a lot of teachers teaching bilingual programs, and you know, there's this belief that it's better, but you know, maybe some evidence would be nice that this is working and it's good for the kids.
So that wasn't just Sean going into one classroom. That was Sean looking at the pathway that kids take from what, kindergarten to senior year of high school?
12th grade, yeah.
Yeah. So I could see, now that makes sense to me when you're talking about looking at the whole system, because a researcher doesn't usually get to go in and ask for that kind of access.
Exactly.
That's pretty special.
Yeah, that's a big part of the partnerships, is trying to build up the data infrastructure. I remember we're starting another partnership with another school district. This time it's not unified. There's like 9 school districts, but they're all in the same region. They feed into the same high school. We're trying to get their data, and someone comes out of the back room that sort of looks like where the boiler would be, and there's a box. Uh-huh. She says, is this the kind of data you want?
I think, yeah.
So a lot of work to get, make it possible to gain access to the evidence, and also a lot of work to make sure that people appreciate the findings of the evidence, which oftentimes the superintendents like, because it allows them to tell their school boards, no, this is what the evidence showed. That's why we're doing it.
I think you've presented at some of those school boards, haven't you?
Badly, yes, of course, of course.
So I want to hear another one. Tell us more.
Well, the other one I was thinking about in San Francisco is around math. So San Francisco made a big policy shift in math, where they really detract their math. It's a pretty controversial
subject. Can you just explain what that means? It means,
yeah. And so instead of having different levels of math, like you're in a entry level or advanced track through up until 10th grade, yes, all students are in the same math class, and it's not differentiated. It's a big deal, right?
That's hugely controversial.
Hugely controversial.
Parents will be flipping out.
Parents will be flipping out, but it's showing some pretty good results. Okay, there's some better grades going on, things like that. And Joe Bowler, who's a professor at the Graduate School of Education, said, hey, let's come in and start understanding what is the type of teaching that it takes to actually teach these classes where there's kids with all these different ability levels. And they're starting to also see that it's really helping students with their identity around being math-oriented and math, excellent in math, and not just your average student, both the advanced student and students that we've traditionally underserved, like African-American, Latina students, English learners.
Wow. This is Schools In with Dan Schwartz and Denise Pope. We're talking with Laura Wentworth about research practice partnerships and how they work and why we would do them. And that math example is pretty powerful, because that is not a typical policy, from what I can tell, from districts across the country to detract math. And for the district to make such a bold statement and to have the Stanford researchers come in and say, actually, this is pretty good.
Yeah, so the schools and the district leaders really, that's one of the things they value about the researchers, is they'll come in, they'll talk to their school boards, they might even talk to the community. Even in the English learner study, we had them talking to community members, parent advisory committees about the research and the findings.
So this is good. We've got second language learning, we've got math, those are big ones. Let's pick one more. How about the study on ethnic studies?
Yeah, the ethnic studies. So San Francisco also was a leader in that it decided, the school board wanted to pass a policy that piloted an ethnic studies course with the ideal that eventually all students in San Francisco at the high school level would take an ethnic studies course. And this policy said that the ethnic studies course would solve world peace and truancy.
Of course.
It would, you know, close the achievement gap. It would do it everything. So the assistant superintendent of high schools, Bill Sanderson, kind of came to me and said, oh my God, I need the research to test this idea. And I paired him with Tom Dee, a professor at the Graduate School of Education, and Emily Penner, who was a postdoc then, now at UC Irvine. And they did some incredible research that really showed that it, you know, doubled kids' GPAs, it made incredible gains in attendance, and really kind of did what that policy was saying, right. So much so that San Francisco then passed a policy that the course needed to be offered across its high schools.
One of the interesting things was it didn't just improve their grades in ethnic studies, it improved their performance in all their other classes as well.
Wow.
Yeah, so that's another kind of lightning rod topic. So I didn't realize we were doing this, that we were sending researchers as like canaries and to see is there poison gas there.
No, I would look at it a different way. I think this is a pretty bold district.
Yeah.
Making some pretty, kind of controversial decisions. And before they go too far and require everyone to do something, they want to say, hey, we believe in research. Let's really check it out. And it's nice that you have professors who are interested and want to study those topics.
Yeah. And I think the teachers, principals, school district officials, they want to know is what they're doing working. I mean, that's where the data driven decision making and the movement to use data came from. But then layering in some research that can really get at the impact and also help them with the design and the delivery. So they actually like sometimes when the researchers come with their own questions, because they like hearing the ideas that are coming out of the journals you were talking about in the beginning. And that's one way that the evidence feeds in. It's kind of like they need that researcher on speed dial.
Right.
They need that researcher they can call up and say, hey.
Like the concierge doctor model? Dan, you could be a concierge researcher.
What does that mean?
Okay, so concierge doctor is I'm sick, but I pay enough money to my special doctor that I can call them at any time and they will come at any time.
This is like mom and apple pie, right? It just, what could be better than this? So helping local decision making, coming up with generalized impact, addressing fundamental problems, improving the kids' lives. This is like mom and apple pie. I'm not sure which is mom and which is apple pie. But so why aren't there more of these? Why isn't everybody doing
this? Well, I always explain part of my job is to kind of like when you're skiing and you go down a slope and it's been paved, and it's groomed. Well, I'm kind of breaking trail constantly, right?
Yeah.
I'm kind of, and this is
so there's not more of these because you're out of shape?
Exactly. It's these two institutions, the university and the school district, they're not designed to work together. They are maybe around teacher training. That's probably the closest that it comes.
Yeah.
But not in terms of doing research. And so really, we've been working with Stanford, as you know, Dan, to build more infrastructure for this. And from California Education Partners' perspective, we're hoping the state of California can become interested in this as well for building that infrastructure.
Exciting stuff.
Very.
Thank you. Thank you so much for being here, Laura.
Thanks.
And thank you for listening to Schools In with Dan Schwartz and Denise Pope.
From the campus of Stanford University, this has been Schools In with Dan Schwartz and Denise Pope on SiriusXM Business Radio. If you missed any of it, listen on demand, online, or with the SiriusXM app.